Welcome to another episode of the Technology and Science Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Neil Das, who is the LMM squad lead for Roche. Welcome, Neil. Thank you for joining us today, where we're going to talk all things LMM within clinical and healthcare. Really keen to get your thoughts and insight on the development of large language models. Obviously, everyone is talking about it. You can't get away from it. Since the latest version of ChatGPT came out, there's been so much movement within this space. So yeah, really keen to hear your thoughts on where, I suppose, where large language models are going and what the impact is going to have. Do you want to give a short introduction to yourself and a bit about what you do?
Yeah, thank you, Richard. Thanks for having me. I think we have known each other for some time now. To give you a brief introduction about myself, I am a senior data scientist working at Roche, and I lead a small team of NLP engineers where we develop different LLM powered features for the different products in our portfolio. Mm-hmm. I have a research background in machine learning applied to medical diagnostics. So for the past 7 years, and before 2022, I was in academia, and then I then joined Roche, and I started working on various NLP and LLM projects. And I think it's a very exciting space to be in right now. There are a lot of very cool advancements, and I feel that the kind of work we do, we are sort of at the frontiers where this field is going, and really happy to chat about on this topic today.
Perfect. Could you talk me a bit about where you or how you've seen large language models evolve over the past year or so?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, I have been in this field for quite some time. So I have worked with the traditional NLP, and when we were working with traditional NLP methods, the models weren't that large. I mean, they were, but in the order of a couple hundred million parameters, like the BERT models were most well known, and we had. We know how these models work. We also knew that OpenAI and some other AI labs were working on scaling their models to like a billion plus parameters. But then when GPT-2 came out, we were a bit excited. It was before ChatGPT, which we know in November, which came out in November 2022, I think. We sort of knew where GPT-2 came out, and we were a bit excited because it was it could produce like short coherent responses. But when I was really taken back when ChatGPT came out, because the responses became much more coherent. There were also some capabilities related to reasoning that was emerging, and what I found fascinating was that these models, these capabilities were achieved simply by scaling the training data and scaling the number of scaling the model sizes. And since then, the advancements have been very, very rapid. So there were new models being released, not from OpenAI. We know ChatGPT 3.5 came out. Then there was 4 within a span of a couple of months. Then there were other people who also trying to catch up to the race, and they were releasing their own models like Meta 2, which became an open source effort. So that was a sort of open source effort, but supported by Meta. But then there was also a completely open source effort where communities were coming together and trying to replicate, trying to train these models simply through volunteering efforts. There was an effort from there was a community called Open Chat. I think that is still up there. So there was a lot of excitement what these models could do, and people also started implementing these in their workflows, in their products, for example. So how I see last year, 2023, I think it was a year of POC. It was people now evaluated their capabilities. They have realized their potential. Business leaders have understood, hopefully, the tremendous impact it can make on the top line as well as the bottom line. And we are now in a stage where we have sort of come out of this POC stage, which was, I think, was the year of 2023. And now we are in the stage. We are trying to put this actually into real products and see how it performs. Of course, when we say we, I am talking from the perspective of healthcare industry, because that's where I came from. Big tech companies are already way ahead in the game, but healthcare companies have to proceed a bit more cautiously because, of course, there's a lot of regulatory oversight. But we are quite excited that we are at the frontiers of the field. We are trying to get these technologies to our users in a safe and responsible way. That is what we always try to do.
The other thing as well about, obviously, the areas that you work in and that we recruit into is that the changes are trying to have a positive impact for both patient care or users or however it's used. What are some of the positive impacts that you've already directly seen large language models have on the work that you've done so far?
The most positive impact that I have seen is the ability of these models to really, really automate a lot of these redundant admin tasks that healthcare professionals still have to do. When the digital transformation of a hospital started probably like 15, 20 years ago, the EHRs came into the scene. But when the EHRs came, the amount of admin tasks also increased a lot. No healthcare professional likes. And this is something that people have realized that this can be solved now with healthcare, with large language models. So there is a lot of impact that is being made by implementing these solutions to automate a lot of these mundane tasks. For example, automated billing, automated coding, summarization of patient records, structuring of unstructured reports, things like that. There are a lot of tasks now. People are trying to automate it with large language models. There are a lot of startups that have raised money. For example, there's a company called Nuance, which has raised money to automated scribing and then also summarizing them. So what I have seen is that these models have the ability to create a lot of impact when it comes to reducing administrative tasks. And that is one of the most major causes of burnout for our healthcare professionals. And if we could reduce this burden, then they can do the task that they are best at, which is providing good quality care. So this is just, we are not scratching the surface. Of course, there are multiple levels of impact that these models can make, and we are still a bit far away from that point. We are now at the baseline. These are use cases which probably wouldn't be considered, in my opinion. As medical devices, or it shouldn't come under the regulatory purview. So because these are just administrative tasks. But there's another class of applications where it can transition to those slightly higher risk applications where these models may be construed as medical devices. And for that, we would probably need more evidence. And that is what people are working on. Applications such as, can we use large language models to provide a diagnostic insight for a patient, things like that. These are slightly more risky applications because you need to generate evidence for their safety and efficacy. And that is now a work in progress, I would say. And I think we wouldn't be far out from now.
What would you say is the best thing you've achieved in your career with large language models so far?
The best thing is, I have really improved my own productivity probably. I cannot imagine a time before these models, before this was the case. We are now in a generation where we are using these things very actively. Before 2022, probably we were using it passively. For example, if you're watching YouTube, a video that is recommended to you or an ad that you see is probably an AI machine learning model that read your characteristics and suggested you something. But this is the year, these are the years where we have started using it very actively. And I kind of use tools like GitHub Copilot in my programming work, or our company provided a ChatGPT. To really improve the productivity. And I can see there's a lot of advantage to that. Other than that, in healthcare, I think we are still in a work in progress. This year, we generated some good evidence in a very limited settings. And now we are trying to safely do more research, trying to integrate it into some of our products and try to get it as soon as possible to our healthcare professionals as soon as possible. Yeah.
Can you talk me through the limitations that you may face in healthcare compared to other areas? And obviously, we understand that the regulation on patient data or any data within a clinical setting can be is obviously a lot higher. But what, I suppose, why does that impact you so much? And what are the solutions you're trying to do to help with this?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. So one of the biggest challenges that we often face when we are working with these models is how do you make sure AI generated text is how can you validate this text? Earlier, when you had the classical machine learning approach, the validation was quite easy because you could quantify the errors. But with the advent of these models, because these models simply generate text, and you validating them is not easy. You would have to use a different set of tools, and now there is no right approach. And one of the common questions that we get from our healthcare from our users is, you know, how accurate are these models? What is the hallucination rate? And sometimes there is no one approach that fits all to sort of quantify that, because LLM generated text is a bit subjective in nature as well. So we sometimes struggle with it, but these days people are working on newer methods. People are putting out good research, which we are trying to also incorporate into our own workflow to implement robust validation methods for LLM generated text, so that we can know beforehand, before we deploy these things into production, deploy these things into a clinical setting, we know under what environment these models will perform the best, or under what settings these models will perform the most. So hopefully we will have this type of validation done.
And where do you see that going? What do you think are some of the positive impacts that large language models could achieve in the healthcare sector? And what do you think is, like, looking into the future a bit, where do you think these can go?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I will just cite one research that was done in 2023, you know, where this could probably go. So in 2023, there was a very famous article that was published in Nature Medicine. And these were researchers from, I think, the New York hospital system. And what they showed is that you can use the unstructured clinical records of patient data to predict events in advance. And they predicted with a very reliable accuracy, I think, the risk of hospital readmission. So what I'm trying to emphasize is the fact that by simply crunching all the unstructured data, there's a lot of information, a lot of insight that can be extracted from these unstructured records. And I don't know, there is a saying, or there's a statistic which says that 80% of all healthcare records are in unstructured form. So if you can mine them using large language models, you can derive clinical insights. And in this case, they predicted risk of admission, which was a very good insight, because, and this prediction was much superior than the standard models that they have, which were simple statistical models. So we are now entering a realm of personalized medicine. So can you use large language models? Can you digest all these patient records? And can you predict very personalized patient trajectories? So these guys showed that you can probably predict the risk of readmission. And just, I think the last week, someone posted on LinkedIn, and they published a paper on a similar line, where they showed that you can use a GPT type of model to read the patient timeline. You can digest the patient timeline, and you can predict probably the next event. And they also, and the model also performed quite well. So these things give me signal to me that we are going in the direction of personalized medicine, where we will be at some point be able to predict how a patient would move in their care journey, how a patient would move in their treatment or management journey. And this can be done this could be doable by large language models. But of course, large language models is not the only solution. You would also have to integrate other signals as well. For example, you would have to integrate physiological or biomarker data, other genomics data. So again, we are then expanding the scope of purely a text-based domain to like this multimodal domain. And I foresee a future where we will have these really large, complex models which can integrate different sources of data to provide very personalized care trajectories on an individual level. So, and in fact, there are some companies which has raised money recently to explore something called biological foundational models. So again, that is that signals to me again that we are going in that direction where these models would be probably be utilized to perform personalized predictions.
Amazing. And that's, yeah, again, I think that's completely fair point. And you're right. Everyone is talking about how getting personalized medicine and personalized care for people is so important. And the use of that data and how it's going to be utilized in the future is going to be really interesting. Neil, you've dedicated a lot of your career and a lot of your research towards large language models. Where did that fascination come from for you, and why was it so? Why was it different from other types of machine learning models or anything else out there?
That's a good question, and this is something I also think about. Why there's a lot of fascination for me. So traditionally, I used to view classical machine learning models as simple algorithms. Define the domain, you know, define the set of inputs and define what the output should be. And you simply have a statistical model that connects, that knows how to map the inputs, the outputs. There was nothing fancy in it. And of course, you can do a lot of, the inputs could be really complex, but still at the end, you could have deep learning models. But at the end, these are like neural nets, which can map like a complex set of inputs to a set of output, to an output. But with what large language model, what fascinates me, and that is something people are still exploring this question, is when you simply scale the size of the models, simply increase the number of parameters in the model, and you train these models on a very large amount of data, the models can, of course, these models are trained to predict sort of the next token. So for example, I had a great, what should be the next word? I had a great day, probably is the most likely word. So these models have been simply trained to predict the next token. But what fascinates me is when you simply increase scale, when you scale the training of these models, so like strange capabilities emerge. And sometimes that's a bit unsettling, you know, because you could observe capabilities such as reasoning, logical reasoning, or even logical consistency. Even you could also see glimpses of planning. So all these capabilities which we thought was never possible in a model was now emerging by simply solving a very basic task, which is predicting the next token. And I would still like to explore this question, you know, how these additional capabilities were being have come out. But what it also points to me is that these models can now be used to solve a lot of really hard problems, which was one unthinkable. Like we couldn't even fathom automating these hard, solving these hard problems. But now with the advent of these tools, there is a shot at solving these hard problems, especially in the field of healthcare. And if we can solve these problems, it means we would really ease the life of our healthcare professionals and enhance the standard of care and eventually improve the lives of our patients. So that is where I think, so there is a lot of opportunity for these models to solve a lot of hard problems to enhance the overall quality of care. But at the same time, we still have to improve our fundamental understanding of how they operate at these at the way we see the way we see today.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that progression, and as you mentioned, being able to, when you scale them and seeing the results, what happens at the back of it. But obviously, you have to be quite careful because not all the outcomes are maybe as expected. What are the biggest limitations currently for large language models, or that you see in your profession?
The biggest in my profession, like in healthcare, of course, the biggest roadblock that we see, as I mentioned, was validation, but also we do not have a very large corpus of private documents. I mean, these private electronic health records, they are sort of siloed and controlled by a few players. So, of course, you cannot fine-tune the models, you know, on these. I mean, OpenAI or some other company, they were able to train by scraping the whole World Wide Web. But this is not possible in the field of healthcare because all these data are siloed. And to develop like really good quality models that are, fine-tuned for very specific tasks, you would probably need to collect and aggregate different sources of data. But that seems to be a challenging. For example, if I have to develop a model that does, drug discovery, just to give an example. And of course, this data is highly controlled by different players, pharma companies, whatsoever. So you can train, fine-tune them on smaller data sets, which you control, or you can probably combine them, from different sources and create a bigger data set. And probably what the current trend shows is that the more data you have and the larger models you have, probably you will get to a better model. So again, this healthcare traditionally has been a field where data has been siloed. And so it's very difficult to train high quality models, because simply aggregating data from different sources is not trivial. Another problem is, we do not have evidence yet of their, safety and efficacy. I mean, we have some evidence, especially in their effectiveness in solving administrative tasks, but these are like low risk cases. But still, if we have to really put them in a clinical setting where they are providing diagnostics or some clinical insight, we would have to work on generating the evidence. And people are working on that right now as we speak, to generate evidence of their usefulness.
That seems to be the real blocker, isn't it? If we want to challenge the real problems, access to that data and access to being able to run models on that is going to be the biggest thing that's going to improve those models. Do you see, you mentioned people are working at the moment, what work's going on in that? And do you see a time where you're going to have better access to high-risk data that's going to give you the opportunity to train your models in a way that's going to have real impact?
So the type of work that I'm referring to are mostly, these are spearheaded by people in the academia, because there's a lot of work done by academic researchers on how large language models would perform in a clinical setting. In fact, there was a very good research paper recently which came from Stanford, where they showed that the ability to summarize medical documents of large language models, the performance matches that of clinical experts already, and probably in some cases even outperform them and betters them. So these are the type of the clinical evidence that is being generated. There are different groups that are involved in applying these in clinical setting and trying to see how trying to evaluate their quality, for example. And to the question of whether we can we be in a situation where we would get access to data, I don't think it will be possible, because data traditionally, because there are regulations. First of all, you cannot share data. You cannot simply, even between two hospital systems, sometimes it's not trivial. And even between two countries, that's another, I don't think it would be ever possible. I'm not sure how we will reach there, because these data silos are definitely a roadblock. If there was a way, for example, we can combine all these different data sources. I don't think we will be ever in a position to train models on massive amounts of data, patient data specifically. We have already trained models on publication data, but these are publicly available open source, for example, the PubMed. But in this case, to develop models that can provide personalized clinical insights, you would need high quality patient data, and these data are, the availability of such data sets are quite small. And I don't think it will, I mean, this is a very structural problem. So unless we solve the structural problem of data sharing in a safe and secure way, we will not be in a position to develop like high quality, robust large language models that are fine tuned for healthcare, electronic health record data.
Yeah. And as I know, obviously a big topic at the moment is AI regulation and how there's going to be more regulation put on some of the work that's going to be done in this space. What's your thoughts on, I suppose, the topics that are being discussed in this area? And I suppose, how important is it that we're focusing on how companies are utilizing AI?
Yeah, so I think you may have recently read the AI Act that was being passed in the in Europe. So yeah, I mean, I completely support this act. So we have to really uphold the standards of privacy and confidentiality when we are processing patient data. So that is without fail, we always have to make sure. There's also a requirement on being completely transparent on what these models are doing. That will also be a challenge, because some of the way the large language models, they work, even the researchers who have developed them are not very sure how they work. So that is, I think, will be another challenge. Of course, we can show the evidence that this works, but why do they work? The explainability, that will be, I think, a hard problem. When we are showing this model, when we're trying to get these models in the hands of the HCPs. But overall, I think this is a good step for our whole field. I highly think that they will, this is the right direction, but these regulations were required. I think privacy and confidentiality, these are some of the two biggest concerns. They always have been. In our work, for example, we always make sure that we are treating the data that we process with the most, with utmost care. We follow all the standard protocols. And I have, like, personally, I have seen, like, the devastating effect what it could do when you try to, you know, follow the quicker way. So your data, if your data gets hacked, the other day during a call, someone mentioned to me that the price of a patient record in the black market could be as high as $50 per patient, or sometimes it can even go to $300 per patient in the black market. And a lot of these hospitals, if you have seen the news, right, some bad actors would often hack them and hold them to ransom. And these are, like, really problematic aspects. And that's why we all have to be very seriously, we have to be really, really serious when we are working in this field.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. In terms of, obviously, large language models have been hyped heavily over the past 12 months, maybe a bit longer. And we've been, well, one of the positives out of that is the amount of research and work that's gone into large language models is that we've seen so much progression in how these models work and the outcomes of that, and there's so much more attention within that. My question to you, is it worth the hype? Do we feel like this is something that's going to really continually impact our future?
I think the hype was at its peak, I think, in the middle of 2023. You know, everybody was swept by what these models could do. I mean, whenever a new technology launches, there is always the hype cycle that we all probably know. You know, it reaches a fever peak and then it sort of dies away. But then the actual growth starts happening slowly. I think we are still in the hype cycle, but somewhere, like, we are going down right now. We are, like, from the top of this summit, we are, like, sort of going down. I think the the point to know that this large language models by probably by the end of 2024 or 2025, people won't be discussing as much, because probably people have already accepted it as like part of their lives. People have already using ChatGPT. Most people I know, so it will become commonplace, I think. But also means is that implementing them in solutions as products or what have you, to show actual business impact, that is where the main challenges will come, and that is when the actual usage would start picking up. And if we are not reaching that stage where we are able to demonstrate an ROI on the investments that we are doing right now by integrating this into our solutions or products, so we have to definitely come out of the POC stage. Almost everybody I know did a very successful POC, so that's why there was, so now the time has come to actually put them into business applications and actually get an ROI, try to get an ROI out of it. And that is where, that will probably set the field whether there is an actual potential or not. If we find out that people actually don't need these things, I kind of doubt that, but these are so helpful. But if say in an alternative reality that people find out that these are not that helpful, then I think the bubble will definitely burst. But right now we're still in the sort of the peak. It's going down, although, but once we start showing actual practical benefit of these applications in the months to come, that is where hopefully the actual progress will start picking up. And then this will become a commonplace technology in a year or two once the practical applications also become validated.
Yeah. I think large language models obviously have so much promise. And one of the things that's exciting is you mentioned about the personalized medicine previously. But there's also a large piece about diagnosis and making sure that, I suppose, speeding up that process. I think lots of people getting access to doctors and clinicians can take some time. Technology is now at a point where we may start seeing this impact. How long do you think until we start seeing large language models start impacting diagnosis and clinical decisions?
Yeah, so I like to see this as like a pyramid, so which mm-hmm. has like three layers. So at the base layer, we are right now implementing large language models to solve these admin problems, challenges that healthcare professionals have. That's something is already going on, and I think this will be implemented fairly quickly. The second step is more about information retrieval and diagnostic support. I wouldn't say clinical decision making, but something diagnostic insights. For example, a frontline worker would like to know how to treat a very specific wound, and then you could like chat it up using an interface and get the very specific, retrieve the very specific documents and suggestions, and then you can apply that, So again, that is that probably will come under regulatory purview, in my opinion. So that is the second step, where it's more about document retrieval when you're searching for what medical actions to take. But this third layer, which is the top of the pyramid, where that is where the clinical diagnostics insights would come in. That is where the personalized treatment trajectory, personalized care journeys will be predicted by these models. And the diagnostics, the research, people have already shown the potential that, personal diagnostics or a personalized plans can be predicted based on your text health records. But of course, there's a lot of work to be done. You will have to run clinical trials to actually demonstrate the efficacy and safety of these applications. We are still a bit further out there. I remember when AI in radiology, deep learning in radiology was gaining a lot of momentum. So initially, a lot of papers were being released, published, showing that they can predict with remarkable accuracy, sometimes outperforming radiologists. So we are kind of in that stage right now with large language models, where we are showing when it comes to diagnosis or when we're kind of showing that it's we are trying to compare the performance of these models with actual medical experts. But the actual data, actual clinical evidence, I don't think, apart from very limited clinical studies, there hasn't been any large scale study which has been done to or done by any company or any academic lab that gives us confidence that these models can be safely used in a clinical setting. In fact, even in AI for radiology applications, I mean, the first deep learning algorithm started getting published in 2014, but I think it was until 2017 or 18 when the first AI in radiology application was granted a FDA clearance. I don't quote me on you. I'm messing up the updates, but it took us a little bit of time from the research to the actual model in a clinical setting. Often there is a latency there, and I think this will be same, in my opinion, in the case of large language models, where initially people will start publishing these limited small sample studies, then they will scale these studies to larger samples, and eventually they will have full-scale clinical trials, even longitudinal studies, hopefully, prospective studies where they will actually also try to track other parameters like quality of life and things like that. So the potential has been highlighted, I mean, with the current work already, but the data to support safe application of these models still need to be generated, and we are simply waiting for that. And meanwhile, we'll also see a lot of progress in the models modeling part, as the algorithmic aspect itself. So that will also probably create more exciting opportunities to solve new problems. Multimodal is one of the very exciting applications, I think it will prove to be. Again, the problem with multimodal applications is that integrating different data sources is very challenging. And then you often do not have the same quality or say quantity of data across all the different data types. A lot of challenges have to be overcome before we are in a stage where we are implementing them for personalized medicine.
What do you think the application within multimodal is so exciting? What's so promising about that?
Okay, so the reason multimodal data, I mean, it has always been known in the field in human physiology that, you know, there is no one single thing that contributes to your whatever, to your condition. It's a systems thing. You have multiple different processes that are going on in your body that sort of combines together to create a cumulative effect which leads to a certain, for example, disease progression or a symptom. So in fact, most of the things that we observe are just the outcome, you know, of the actual root causes. And these root causes can be embedded in a lot of different types of data. For example, genomic data or protein sequences. And it could be at different levels, at the genomic level. In fact, some are even going to the molecular level, but I do not understand how that works. But if you think about it, if you can somehow connect the biological data at different scales, right from genomic to the most the physiologic level, where you are just measuring these physiological data, for example, time, your temperature or your blood pressure, or even, for example, your imaging. But sometimes you can enrich each of these data as well. Physiological data, for example, from your imaging can be supplemented with data from, you know, from your sensors. So when you are like combining these different data from different sources, you create a unique footprint. And this footprint may not be observed if you are just analyzing a single piece of evidence. So that is why it is very exciting, because when you are combining data, when you are analyzing at a multimodal level, right from genomic, and you're also integrating all these different sources, physiological sources, you can create a very detailed fingerprint, which can then be analyzed and can be used to predict different conditions down the line. And that is why multimodal data analysis is always the most powerful way of analyzing any human condition.
Amazing. It sounds like we've got a lot of work and a lot of, the future with LLMs is obviously very bright in terms of what could be expected and how far this can go. Some hurdles to tackle. It's been really fascinating delving into this with yourself, Neil. Was there anything you're promoting at the moment? Are you doing any conferences? Are you doing any talks within large language models coming up?
No, I'm not doing any conferences as of now. I do some community events, you know, local meetups and stuff. So I am involved in the community. But I'm also quite active on LinkedIn. So if you I share a lot of Gen AI insights in healthcare. So if you're interested in following the latest updates, I do share a lot of new research or my own opinion on how these models are impacting in a healthcare setting. I mean, how these models are, the kind of impact they are creating in a healthcare setting. So I share these type of views. So if you are into that, to follow me on LinkedIn.
Great stuff. Thank you so much for your time, Neil. It's been really fascinating. Yeah. And I look forward to talking soon.
Yeah. Thank you, Richard. Thank you so much.